The following program is being broadcast on the Amazing Women of Power, the world's leading positive programming network, powered by Raven International. This show contains motivational language and may not be suitable for negative listeners.
Dreams. I've had enough of these annoying and distracting schemes. I'll choose my friends because apparently they're choosing me. The time is now to pay attention to my destiny.
From his humble studio in Orange County, California, comes a young songwriter with a dream, encouraging others to go after their dreams. Learning from the best in the business and passing it along to you, it's Strong Rider on the radio.
I had the blues, but I made it better, baby. And that's why I wrote this song. And now you can sing along.
Sing along. My mind's made up to keep on going after my dreams. And I hope that you'll go after your dreams. Let's do them together. My name is Dean Olson, and welcome to Strong Rider on the Radio, a program that strives to keep the songwriter musically fit. And the way I see that being done is to be inspired and to keep focused on your dreams and why you're doing what you're doing. It's very important, I believe. And my next featured guest is actually a husband and wife duo, John and Judy Rodman from Nashville, Tennessee. They know a little bit about keeping your dreams alive, keeping it in front of you, and following it, even to this day where they have been performing and writing music for almost 45 years. And together, they are releasing a debut album as a couple, John and Judy Rodman, and the title is Here We Are. And I know that you're going to enjoy their music and these people. They're wonderful. So let me go to that interview. Here we go. I'm here to talk with a couple of great people that I just met. They're based in Nashville, Tennessee. John and Judy Rodman. They're a husband and wife duo that have been creating music for more than 40 years. I think since 1971, Judy told me. Judy's an award-winning recording artist, stage and television performer, producer and songwriter. And John is a drummer who has Memphis roots with thousands. He's had a lot of credits ranging from the symphony to amphitheaters to the recording studio. And the latest thing they're doing right now is an album called Here We Are, which is going to be, it's their latest musical adventure, writing, recording, performing together as an original music Americana duo, husband and wife. Love that. Kind of June and Johnny Cash, huh? So, hey, John and Judy Rodman, it's a pleasure to have you on my show. How are you doing today?
Doing great. Thank
you. Great. Yes. Thank you for having us.
Well, for those who don't know you, maybe we could start from... Maybe start from your humble beginnings. Judy told me you've been performing together or separately since 1971. Do I have that kind of right?
That's it. That's correct. Yeah, we met in Memphis, where I'm originally from, and we both worked at a jingle mill there in Memphis, and got into a top 40 cover band with the guys that were in the rhythm section I played with at the studio, and that's how we got started.
Wow, sounds good. I want to hear more about that, but I figured ladies first. Judy, Judy, where did you? Before we talk about how you two met, what were your earliest recollections of starting music? Were you singing as a child, something like that?
I was. I think I've been doing harmony my whole life because I was the oldest child, and what happened was, you know, every time another child came along, I got put on another part.
Uh-oh.
In the family band, sort of.
Okay.
I had to learn harmony.
How big is your family?
Oh, there are four kids, so there were six of us. And my father was an air traffic controller, but he was always a kind of a musician on the side. Uh-huh. And he and my mother and all my siblings, we all just kind of had a casual family band. And when people ask me when I started singing, I mean, I didn't start singing. I just think I popped out singing. So,
a lot of people have that story. They start at a young age, either playing an instrument. Do you do that too? Did you learn an instrument?
I did. I started playing piano when I was 6 years old.
Oh boy!
And you know, I started playing the typical repertoire, but then I started playing by ear. And I remember my piano teacher she kind of caught on to me, and she stopped playing it for me first, so I would have to read it. But I went towards doing a lot more stuff by ear, and I just, you know, leaned towards, I liked creating things, and I guess it was an auspicious beginning because I ended up liking to create things from scratch.
I can relate to that. How did the music teacher react to that?
Oh, she was precious. She was wonderful. She just wanted me to be able to do both, and that came in extremely handy. I'm very proud of the fact that I can read music besides being able to play by ear, because I think that you can never know enough about your craft. I don't agree that you can know too much and it, you know, takes the magic out. I don't believe that at all.
That's wonderful.
So I highly recommend music education.
How nice. Let me take turns here. Hey, John.
Yeah.
What was your first? Were you beating on pots and pans or something like that when you were a little kid? Or did you always get into the drums, or just come later on?
Well, they came a little bit later on. Like a lot of people in my generation, I took piano lessons when I was, you know, about 8 or 9 years old.
Uh-huh.
Then I quit that when Little League Baseball started.
Right.
And in Memphis, in the eighth grade back then, you had a choice. You either in the chorus or in the band.
Okay.
And there was no way I was going to be in the chorus. So I picked the simplest, what I thought would be the simplest instrument, just get through with it, had no interest in it. And I picked drums, and within a month, I had cut off a couple of cue sticks and made drumsticks and played on the bottoms of trash cans.
Wow. Now, why is Judy giggling in the background? Is she liking...
just imagine him doing that.
Yeah, well, when he said...
Went on from there.
When you say you weren't going to be in the chorus, that's... back then, chorus was for girls, I think, right?
Well, just for me, it's because he refuses to sing. I mean, I can teach anybody to sing, but not if they don't want to, and he has just decided that he's got a gorgeous speaking voice, I think, but
yeah, it
he
does
just
sound
will not
good.
Sing, so I can imagine him not wanting to be in the chorus.
Well, then he can put his energies where they're most used.
Yes, that's what I'm thinking. I stay off the drums, and he stays off the microphone.
Brown eyes and a mystery, yeah. Big holes in the safety net. Are you sure what you think he meant? Careful or you get yourself stuck. Pick one cause you can't have two. It's the turkey dinner or the chicken stew. When you can't tell if you win or lose, close your eyes and wish yourself luck. Count the silver, hide the gold. Steal a rock from a mother load. Good times sometime come and go, especially when you want it real bad. Did it fill you up? Did it ease your pain? If you let it do over, would you do it again? Would you put it up there with the best you ever had? Or something like that.
So did you do any formal training, John, for drumming?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I was saying, in the eighth grade, I started taking private drum lessons and ended up getting scholarships to high school and college with my percussion and playing in the symphony and playing dance bands, playing country club dances, just whatever. So I had formal training that way.
Sounds like you concentrate on drumming. You play other instruments as well?
No.
No guitar?
That's it.
You just keep it that way.
Keep it simple.
either separately or together, you're writing a song, are you thinking of the rhythms of the song or, you know, when you're trying to create a melody?
Well, actually, John does play another instrument. He plays piano a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And he knows, I mean, he's written for piano music, in fact. He just did the classical stuff. But he's kind of an overall musician. He doesn't give himself enough credit there. And he usually, like some of the song, one in particular, a couple of the songs started with his drum beat. But he's very interested in the concept of the song.
Mm-hmm.
He's come up with the titles and the gist of what the story is. And he's come up, he may not like some changes, want to, you know, add some changes that are a little bit different than I'm playing. So, but the funny thing is, you know, I've written a lot of ways through the years, but this is the first time he and I both have written together, and this was real co-writing.
Uh-huh.
And it was, you can't, it's the kind of co-writing where you're almost not sure who started it, you know. So it was very organic, and you'd think we'd know each other or something, you know.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. So Judy, what, maybe you could tell me, how did how'd the two of you meet?
We met in band rehearsal. Isn't that just perfect?
Is this in high school?
No, this was in, actually I had moved to Memphis to do jingles. And I was 19 years old.
Uh-huh.
And was doing jingles already professionally, and John was playing drums at the jingle place. But what happened was, I think the session players in the jingle company got tired of just playing jingles, like, you know, 60-second spots, and they wanted to pay 3 or 4 minutes, you know, on a song. So
uh-huh.
Whatever, they decided to form this live band and do the. Well, then we met. They decided they needed a couple of female singers, chick singers, to
uh-huh.
round out the band, and I was one of them. So we met at band rehearsal.
Sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then the rest is history, huh?
And the rest is history, yeah.
So you got married shortly afterwards? You date for a long time, or did you know?
We dated about 3 years, uh-huh. and got 4 years, something like that. We got married in 1975.
Yeah.
I think.
Wow.
This is a long time ago.
So you perform. So I'm doing the math a little bit. You did. You performed a little bit together before you actually got to, hitched.
Right. We met really doing music.
Oh, that's great.
And then we went from there. You know, it just, John's played in my band, and but we'd never done this. Which, you know, we've done music together forever, but. Creating new music and doing this as a duo and recording and producing and this, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And it's such a fulfilling kind of way to full circle back to how we met.
Sounds like a nice little love story there. John, how were you smitten with her at first? Looking or did you fall in love with that voice or the whole package?
Right here.
Yeah, he had an Irish setter. I always joke that he liked me because I looked like his dog.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so so you made this. You were kind of doing this professionally as you met, right? You didn't set off to do something. Now, did you go about your separate ways doing a career? I know that you were out in front, Judy, doing you know, with a band, and
actually, John did that first in that. He went off and played with Tanya Tucker for a while.
Nice.
And so we both sort of did different things. When I became an artist with, I did a lot of session work with all kinds of different players, of course, in Memphis and in Nashville. When we moved to Nashville from Memphis, John was playing for a while and then kind of retired. I was doing a lot of session work, and then I got this artist thing with MTM. And John went on the road with me, and we did places like The Tonight Show, and, you know, just really had some really wonderful times there. And then, you know, if you live a very long life in the music business, it's definitely on roller skates, you know.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a crazy thing. So, it's always interesting why somebody picks to have a life like that. I mean, did you ever, did your family ever say, yes, you have talent, but, you know,
oh, yeah.
Is it better to get
my father wouldn't pay for my education because I was going into music.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the truth.
Why is it? I wonder. I guess it's just because it's such a whirlwind. It's so unstable and
You know what? Any career in the arts, I think, is that way. You wouldn't really wish it on your children unless they really wanted, they had to do it. And it really wasn't. Something, you know, I could have gone into science research, but it was just the windows of opportunity that opened for me, and I think for John, happened to be in the professional music world, and it just, I don't think it was anything we planned. We just, you know, it was there, we did it, we kept doing it, and now it's here the way it is.
Wow. Thanks.
But I think once a musician, always a musician. I do think that.
It's in your heart. It's in there. Mm-hmm. So, John, what was it like playing with Tanya Tucker? You had to keep up, huh? You got to rock out?
Well, this was back in 1976, and we were still living in Memphis, and I only did the road work with her for about 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to be too much because I was doing sessions three or four nights a week in Memphis and then having to drive up to Nashville to go out from there. And so I only did it for about 6 months. And, you know, she's got a reputation, but I'll tell you something.
Yes.
She was one heck of a performer.
Yeah.
I really loved working with her on stage.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she could really sing. And
she could belt it out, right?
She had it. I mean, she, you know. So that part of it was fun, but like I say, it was just tough keeping up with Memphis and Nashville. So
was this way before hooking up with Glenn Campbell back then?
Yes.
Yeah. So, but she was still feisty or whatever.
Oh well, yeah.
Oh, I love her. Yeah, she was a firecracker as far as I remembered. Yeah. I can only go from the press. You know, I don't live out in the thick of it down there in Music City, as they say.
Yeah.
She was supposed to be a temporary warm distraction. You lit a fire, now you find you like the way it burns. The way she moves like a magnet to metal attraction. Baby, it ain't ever coming home. You can't remember when she wasn't everything you needed. You're solitary like it's disappeared like the last week's rain. She's got you locked in velvet chains, and if you don't believe it, just try to move your heart away from her and feel the pain. You want it back now, but you can't get it. You call it back now, but you
got any other stories from on the road? I mean, you know, it sounds like a lot of you kind of had it together. I mean, you held together a relationship over all this time. a marriage. And I don't know, how do you make that work? If you were still working sort of in tandem with each other, or did you go have gigs separately?
Well, when she had her record deal, I pretty much, except for the year I was out on the road with her, I wasn't even in the music. I wasn't even doing music at that time.
Oh, okay.
But now, as far as road stories, I think this probably would be the top of my list. When she was had a record deal and she was going to open for who was Merle Haggard, yeah.
Oh.
In Lake Tahoe, and we were playing a club show right before that in Phoenix, and the club owner was supposed to take us to the airport the next morning, and he never showed up, and we ended up riding in the back of the laundry truck to the airport.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Sounds fun.
So we could get there on time. We sure did. We gave the laundry truck driver an autographed picture, and he was cool with that.
And then because it was all on the Merle Haggard scene, it was probably fun.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So did you ever have a thing where you were, at the time, you were thinking, oh, maybe not the Merle Haggard story, but you have any where you go, like, I'm just going through hell, but when you look back on it, it wasn't so bad at all? I mean, did you go through anything tough?
You know, I mean, yeah, the road can be really tough when your bus breaks down and you... like a dummy, you bought one, and it breaks down, and you're stranded, you know, for 2-3 days with a whole band and a hotel bill and all that kind of stuff. It's not all glamour for sure.
Yeah.
But when we look back on it now, it's memories that we have, and several of the people that we went on the road with became very dear friends of ours. Such as Bird Burton, who was part of the Rhythm Aces.
Oh, Amazing, yeah. Amazing Rhythm Aces. Yeah.
He passed away a couple of years ago, but we stayed really close friends with him and some of the other people. Mike Davis ended up playing for Dolly and mm-hmm. owning his own digital mastering place in Nashville, and he'll probably come to our album release party. And you know, it's just a long life. It's nice to have that history with these people, and you never know the significance of what you're doing, I don't think, while you're in the middle of it.
Yeah. So, Judy, you have a reputation for being a a vocal coach for a lot of artists, including mm-hmm. Chantel Ogden, who's a friend of mine.
I do. I'm so proud of that.
Yeah. How did you evolve into doing something like that? Did you learn about this stuff beforehand? And then?
No, and I never really intended to do it. But there was a friend of mine, Carol Chase, who was on the road with Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Uh-huh.
And she asked me how to hit a note one time. You know, she and I used to write together at Warner Chapel, and we did a lot of session work together. She's a big session singer too. And one day she was going out on the road and she was having trouble with this one note that she hits in the concert. I forget which song it is. And she asked me how to do it. And I thought to myself, why do you think I know? But she had learned somehow, noticing, you know, me when I directed groups and stuff like that, when I worked with her in the studio, that I knew things. So she is the one that gave me the idea to start maybe doing a little vocal coaching. And you know, in the music business, your career takes dips and climbs and stuff, and things were getting real slow for me and in every other area. And I think it was sort of divine intervention that just, I was supposed to go that way. So I started working with a couple of people, and I found out that I had a knack for doing it, for diagnosing what the problems were and stuff. So I just went on this deep journey of figuring out what and how and all that the voice works, and it's been a blast.
Oh, that's
and
great.
And then I thought I was done. But again, you're just not done, you know, and there's that little bug that goes, you're not done. So I along with being mentoring other people, which I love now, it's really fulfilling to be able to do this with John at this point.
Yeah.
In my life, you know, and make this new music and realize it's not over.
Well, I'm glad that somebody that is a vocal coach still has the chops. I really dig what you put forth on this album. You got a nice voice that I thought I knew what I was listening to. You know, I thought, oh, well, I'll be able to peg her. She sounds like Reba McEntire, or she sounds like, you know, you have your own style, and I love it.
Oh, thank you. That's just one of the nicest things I can imagine anybody saying.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be
I lift my head, I can see it through the dust now. You see so clearly when you look behind. I can sense it, and never again would I be so blind. If they'd kill me, only make me stronger, strong enough to take a chance on faith. And I don't know what's gonna hit me next, but I'm finally not afraid. And I shouldn't be here. I should be. Crashing, break you open wide. Just thank your lucky stars and don't ask why.
And you're out front on the album singing, but I'm sure you have a wonderful engineer mixing it down, but John's drums are compressed so that I can't hear him as much. I don't know if that's on purpose or it's just the way it was. But I was hoping to hear a lot of you banging on the skins and hitting those cymbals.
I don't play that way.
No, you don't. You blend in well, right?
So. Yeah. My idea about drumming is it's got to go with the song and what the singer's doing.
Right.
And one of the guys, I think he's 2 years older than me, who's one of the top drummers in the world, a guy named Steve Gadd. Okay. That's his philosophy. It's my philosophy. And I can remember one time when I was with Tanya, they wanted to hear a drum solo, and I hate drum solos.
So you said, say what? We're not doing that.
No. I think I threw my stick at the guy.
Oh, no. Tell me you didn't do that. No, I'd love to have seen that.
If I did, it was by accident.
It may not be the right analogy, but is it sort of like you're the heart that's pumping the rest of the body, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's...
Yes, it organic, and it's like all the pieces go together seamlessly, kind of. That's kind of what we wanted, and that's what we asked our engineer. And, yeah, Nathan Smith, we thought he did do an amazing, amazing job at the mix. So we were happy. We wanted to kind of create that piece of art where you really don't see the seams, you know?
Yeah.
You just notice the whole.
That's why I put that caveat on there. I didn't want to insult your engineer. I thought it was mixed very well, actually.
Yeah,
but I wanted to hear more cowbell.
You know? No, that was by design.
Yeah. Hey, this is Dean. Well, maybe I don't get to hear more cowbell, but I want to hear more of John and Judy Robin. I bet you do too. Well, guess what? You're going to get that next time here on Strong Rider on the radio with Dean Olson and John and Judy Rodman. So you're going to really enjoy it, and I'll play some more music, and you're just going to have to go and check them out at their website, www.johnandjudyrodman.com. All the information you need will be there, and I got to go. My name is Dean Olson, saying, put your best pen forward and be a strong writer.
And you take care until next time. Thanks a lot for listening. Goodbye now.
To listen to past episodes of Strong Rider on the radio, please go to strongrider.com. You've been listening to Strong Rider on the radio with your host, Dean Olson, on the amazing Women and Men of Power, the world's leading positive programming network powered by Raven International.